Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Be the best, and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodriguez, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Jordan, you know, I'm not known for expressing a whole lot of, you know, outright joy about things, but I have to say...
Where is this going?
I've been watching a lot of, I don't watch a lot of live TV, but I've been watching more live TV because the NHL playoffs are going on, as I know you're aware, being the huge Carolina Hurricanes fan.
Die hard Canes fan over here. Yeah.
And I have to say, this Matthew Stafford commercial, it still gets me. I don't know what it is about it, this AT&T commercial. They play it like ad nauseum on TNT or ESPN or whatever it is. And it's just well done. I don't know what it is about it. Like, it's just the concept of it is so simple and so, like, subtle. And, like, I love Matthew's little, like, when he turns to the camera and says, then you'll never forget it, ever. And then go, like, I don't know what it is. I've probably seen that commercial now like 75 times, and I still watch it every single time. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty clever. So I just wanted to share that.
It plays into, I think he's got a drier sense of humor than we knew when we first sort of all collectively met him. And, you know, being sort of separated on different beats, you don't cover a lot of opposing quarterbacks unless the team you cover plays them. And a lot of times it's like that canned sort of press conference vibe. And so that dark humor, that dry sense of humor, we're learning more and more about Matthew in that regard. And that's been a fun process. So the look to the camera, Rich, when he goes, ever. That does get me as well. I respect it. Good intro. I was a little concerned about where you were going with that, if we were going to turn this into a hockey podcast instead of a total football nerd out podcast that we're about to have with our guest coming up here. But I'm glad you went in that direction with it.
No, I won't. We'll do a whole separate episode about your Hurricanes and how they're doing. But special guest here, Jordan. Before we get to that, not a whole lot of active Rams news. No Odell Beckham Jr. news. So we can get that out of the way right now. Nothing new to report. Stay updated on Twitter with Jordan for that. But here we are entering the second half of May. May 16th, Monday morning, as we record here. Jordan, just, you know, kind of where are we in the OTAs sphere, what's coming up? Things are still going on there, but there's maybe not a lot of on-field action. When are we going to see guys on the field? Maybe we're going to learn a little bit more about what they plan to do on the field. Where are we with that stuff in kind of the calendar of things?
Yeah, so late May is what you're looking at in terms of access to practice and more football activity at practices. Right now they're in phase one and phase two, which means that they can only do sort of in the gym workouts. They can work out with Justin Lovett and Reggie Scott and his training staff as well, but no football activity. It's funny, the defensive backs like can't even play catch with Matthew Stafford because that's a football activity, the act of intercepting a pass. So, they can't even do things. I mean, I'm sure it's not that strictly looked at, but it's the rules of this period of time are super strict, and you're allowed to, interact with the strength coach and the training staff, but coaches have to sort of stay separate from that, which is probably difficult to do in their facilities, but it is happening nonetheless. And then they can get really into the football stuff and the installs. And that's something that I'm super excited about too, because we are going to see not only how this offense will continue to expand, but something that I really am excited to talk about today is we're also going to see how this defense is going to continue to evolve and expand. Rich, you know how much I love this guest that we have on today. I probably fangirl and make this person uncomfortable at certain times because I'm such a huge fan of his work. Cody Alexander is our guest today. Cody, I'm going to just introduce the shit out of you here in a minute, but I'm so happy to have you with us today. And then how are you doing so far this morning?
Doing great. Glad to be here.
So Cody Alexander created the Match Quarter series. He wrote 5 books on defense. He's a defensive expert. You guys probably remember him from the Brandon Staley, Sean McVay Clashing Football Evolutions piece, in which I bugged the living hell out of Cody to talk defensive philosophy with me. And we really sort of did a deep study on what the Rams were doing under Brandon Staley at the time. And Cody has been on top of defensive scheme shifts and changes and evolutions throughout the league. And this one has been pretty exciting. I mean, what do you remember sort of about the tricklings up of that particular time, Cody, as you started to watch what's now become more in vogue throughout the rest of the league?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing there's such a big difference coverage wise from the NFL to the college level, where you have everybody running essentially a 2-high shell at the college level. And again, that's mostly quarters coverage or variations of it. And then you look at the NFL, single high dominant, cover 1 dominant, cover 3 dominant. And then you just got to see 80 to 85+% 2-high alignments by the Rams and the Broncos with Staley and Fangio, and everybody's like freaking out, like, what does this mean? And then it's the old argument, well, are they really running quarters? And then everything about how everything is. And to me, I think that's the nuts and bolts of it, and the why behind it is what I think is so interesting, and how different it is from anything else, mm-hmm. anywhere else.
Yeah. And before we really dive deeply into this and what it means moving forward, and also Cody's been studying Raheem Morris's defense as well, and sort of how they've evolved forward that Staley Fangio system and some of the evolutions of that and the pollinations of that. But Cody, I want to talk a little bit more about your background as well, because you've studied this stuff for a really long time. You've quite literally written multiple books on the subject. One thing I love about the way that you talk about football, and I told you I was going to fangirl out over this. One thing I love about the way that you talk about football is you genuinely love teaching football concepts. Like, you genuinely love the process of explaining what all of this means and what all of this is to people in a way that even people who aren't familiar with, they are not intimidated by, and they are certainly sort of understand the excitement of behind some of the things that this game does and the way that it grows. So take us back a little bit and how your studies started getting a little bit deeper in this regard, including the inception of sort of the Match Quarters and certainly your, I would say, like, scientific exploration into quarters coverage in general.
Yeah, I got a really cool opportunity right out of college to be able to go and work at Baylor under Phil Bennett, who's now at North Texas, and he's been around everywhere. And then at the time, Art Briles was just beginning to kind of get that offensive system off the ground. And so what we ran, which is kind of a variation offshoot of kind of Rex Ryan blitzes with that Jimmy Johnson quarters coverage and that whole concept of what it means to be up front. And you mix that against basically going against one of the greatest college offenses of all time and watching that evolution fold out. And that's kind of where the basis of my kind of foundation of my understanding of football kind of starts from there. And so everything that I look at from there, you know, I want to constantly get better. I want to understand the why behind things. And so football's one of the venues that I get to just be creative and kind of nerd out in. And so from there, I focused on college. And then I'm a huge Broncos fan and have become a huge Rams fan. I really like what's going on.
Not to cut you off, but you text me or DM me, like, we go back and forth about, like, probably 2 or 3 times a week. Like, Cody, and I'm paraphrasing because you say it in a very professional, polite manner. You're like, this is some cool shit they're running. Look at this. What do you think of this? And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh yeah, this is awesome. Let me tell you about this guy that they brought in. And like, we go back and forth on, like, I'm telling you guys, like, go look at Cody's Twitter feed right now. He's doing intensive studies of this team And it's, I think it's so interesting. We talk about evolution and growth in football all the time, but it kind of mirrors your studies of this. I mean, you quite literally found yourself in a similar sort of, I guess, petri dish back when you were at Baylor, because you're literally watching this particular iteration and a very maybe early version of this defense. And speaking broadly, of course, you're watching it go against a cutting edge offense. This is exactly what NFL teams are trying to do now with these systems that are now becoming dominant, is match them and battle them, not just once every once in a while in games, but kind of run theorems against each other on a daily basis in practice because of what they saw McVay and Staley doing that against each other and what that produced. But I think it's interesting because you've sort of found yourself caught in the middle of all of this in a way, because you have seen that. You've seen that happen at a very, very early level. And I remember we were working on that piece together, Cody, back in 2020, of the Sean McVay and Brandon Staley sort of battles. And it was interesting because that name, you know, Jimmy Johnson, that name did come up. I had coaches call me that have been in the league for a while after that piece. And they said, man, this takes me back. This reminds me of when we were looking at some of that those quarters concepts. And I just think it's that's some of the something that you've covered, maybe at first without intentionally doing so. But ultimately, when you look at the scope of what the sort of the broadness of what you've covered, you have covered this trickle up and this evolution.
Yeah, it's really interesting because when I got to the high school, when I came off of Baylor and I went back to the high school level, we really were just an odd front world, because we just didn't have, and most, even in the state of Texas where I'm at, we just don't have a just plethora of large defensive linemen. If you're large, you go to offensive line. It's an offensive state. And has been, obviously. I think everybody kind of understands the quarterbacks that come from the state go everywhere. It's a skill position heavy. It's a real hot part of the country, meaning that everybody here is really fast. And so a lot of things you see are from a three down front. So going back to that three down world, but then having that experience of watching the 4-2-5 kind of blossom back into, you know, people had taught, you know, Gary Patterson been doing it forever. And then everybody's like, this is it. This is what we need to do. You saw it with that. Then you started seeing the transition to the tight front, which is essentially just you're clogging the B gaps. You have a nose guard who's controlling the center, and you're allowing those inside linebackers kind of be free. And what you're doing is you're creating these levers on the outside. And to watch that at the college level, and then you start seeing it pick up, and then it's been around. These concepts have been around forever. Nothing is anything new, but the way that they're pieced together and the philosophy behind them is brand new. I watched football in the last decade truly become a space sport, much in the same way the NBA has become a space sport. Soccer obviously has kind of always been a space sport, but you go and you look at these major, what are all the team sports doing? And it's spreading you out and it's trying to find space. And I call it spatial Darwinism. You either know how to contain it on defense, or you know how to get to it on offense. And those are the people that are going to survive. So like you talked about, that kind of that ebb and flow and that cat and mouse game, the defense is an offensive play. You know, that to me is where I love to be at and understand football.
Are you seeing now too, and we touched on this a little bit, we had dialogue on this a little bit, especially our Rich and I's colleague Deontay Lee wrote this great piece about Pete Carroll, and he's kind of like, I think, representative of one of the last maybe like defensive holdovers, because he did force a catalyst earlier in his NFL career, and it swept across pretty much the entire league. And now everything's changing and moving into, as you say, that spatial Darwinism, which is a phrase that I just get a kick out of. But everything's moving and changing, and now more so matching the system. And it's kind of pointless to even debate, you know, it's a chicken or the egg situation. You know, okay, did you start with the McVay offense and then this defense happened to, or the Shanahan McVay offense, and this defense happened to be just a perfect counter for it, and you know that led to its rise? Or was it, you know, this defense was becoming dominant against really spread out pass heavy attacks at the college level and even at the high school level in some areas, and it naturally was the evolution required as offenses kept moving forward? And whichever came first is sort of that chicken and the egg conversation. But how are you seeing teams pull not just concepts, but pulling like literal people out of separate schemes and areas defensively, especially maybe college to NFL and NFL to NFL, and sort of planting them in these other ecosystems and sort of seeing what pollinates out of that.
Yeah, I think it started really with the Tampa 2 defense back in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. where you just started seeing just your basic 11 personnel, 2x2, 3x1, you know, vertical tight end through the middle. You got basically you saw, if you think about it, the power forward playing tight end. You know, I grew up in Kansas City with Gonzalez. And then obviously you had the Gates from the Chargers. Like you just had these guys that basically were basketball players and they were just playing. And they all they were doing is they were more athletic than the Mike linebackers. Then you have Brian Urlacher, who again is a freak. And everybody tried to find this next Brian Urlacher, which you can't because there's only one that can play in that system. You know what I mean? And so the problem with the Tampa 2 system was just you were never going to be very good in the run game if you didn't have a Warren Sapp that could just, or, you know, or like with the Rams right now with Don, like if you don't have a dominant three technique that can essentially close off a whole side, you're going to have issues. And then you're that constant, just this pulling of the Mike linebacker. Do I go deep? Do I run? Am I in the run fit? And so what you saw was a kind of a going back to Neanderthal ball of like, let's just get everybody in tight and let's run power 3 yards in a cloud of dust. And so I think the what you see now is a lot of the young coaches that grew up in that time are now becoming kind of, they're seeing another iteration of the spread offense. You know, I think 2011, you really saw kind of spread kind of won. Once we turned that corner in 2010 and we got to the next season, like it, everybody was running the spread. It's not going back. I think the injection of analytics, passing on first down, pre-snap motions, these are all things. Well, how do you combat that? And the easiest way to combat it is to play a too high shell. But you can't play Tampa 2. Because if you play Tampa 2, now you have all the old problems that you're going to have again, but the offense has advanced. So you can't go back to something that you've already been doing. And that's where I think the ingenuity of what Fangio started in Chicago, what Staley really kind of brought to the forefront of everybody in LA was that five man front with a too high shell and using leverage as a way, instead of aligning everybody where they're supposed to be pre-snap, you now go ahead and leverage everybody. And I think again, defense is reactionary. And so it's always going to be behind the trend. So when you get something like this, where everybody's like, whoa, this is really different. That's mm-hmm. where I think you get to see the true, hey, this guy's really ahead of the game on it. And I think Fangio had created a system that count was ready made to go ahead and go against what we were seeing with the wide zone RPO, the boot actions that are now back. I mean, Shanahan's been running the boot action. It's with John Elway forever, you know, back in the 90s. So to me, it's like we're just seeing these kind of I call it time's a flat circle. I wrote in my book hybrids, time's a flat circle. The only difference is we keep moving forward. So we're getting these different things, but it looks completely different because of the time that we're in.
Yeah. And I think too, I want to go back to that sort of sequence in what now is football history when, you know, Fangio collides with McVay. At that time, thinking about what you knew about the Rams offense at that time, and especially we've talked about this, that sort of dependency on the play action and certain things that happened post-snap, what was it about that system at that time from your perspective in watching these now, I guess, early iterations of what they've become in such a short time period, which is wild to me. But what was your impression of, okay, this defense is now here at the perfect time as the perfect counter to exactly what this guy is doing?
Yeah, and he just had a system in the secondary that he had made it to where you don't have a down and a cover safety. Like you mm-hmm. don't, you're not going to have a guy that's a box safety. You're not going to have this guy. His system was created, and probably from your time working in his time working in college, of just creating a system of where you have kind of maybe a field side or a boundary side. Okay, well, when you get in the NFL, you don't need a field and boundary, but you do need a primary corner, you need a secondary corner, you need a safety that you probably would more like to be on the weak side, and then you need a safety that you want that's kind of dropping down or things like that. But what he created essentially was just a too high shell where they're just going to rock and they're going to roll depending on the formation, and they're going to defend the formation and what that formation is. I think too, the way that he inverted his cover six, most people understand cover six outside of the Saban world. They understand cover six is quarter, quarter halves. Mm-hmm. Well, Fangio flips that and he says, we're going to run cover two to the passing strength and we're going to run quarters away. Now, why would you do that? And the reason why you do that is that most of the time, now, again, this is something that I had to step away from and really reteach myself, not going up against Art Briles, was we don't have to necessarily worry about four verticals all the time. And in the NFL, everything is layered because it's all kind of that West Coast meshing now with the air raid. And then you have the Air Coryell system. So you have this kind of this mixed bag of thing, best practices, essentially. Everybody kind of runs the same things. Now we're just getting different variations of it. But now he flips it and he's saying, look, we're going to build a triangle over these because we're going to get different layers of it. We're going to get a deep and intermediate and short. Well, if I can do this, I can create a layer there, but then we're going to leverage that backside safety to where we can bring him down and he can either take that crosser and we can cap everything on the front side. Cap just means I can stay on top, or we can use him to double the backside and we can kind of vice that dominant X receiver that, you know, the number one receiver on the backside, which I think is an ingenious way. But then it also, from doing that, you unlock your middle of the field close coverages. Primarily the NFL is now a 3-by-1 formation. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody, and the reason why is because it's such a difficult formation because you've overloaded one side of the field. And I know that, you know, it's only three people, but remember, you can only have five people out, right? So if you put three to a side, you've automatically already overloaded that side. So how do you counter that? Well, what's the number one game in the NFL on offense? It's those fast crossing routes across the middle. And they're great versus middle of the field, closed, which, you know, if you've ever watched anything on single high coverage or the Carroll system, how do you devastate that? You run crossing routes, right? These deep crossing routes that have now are on every NFL offense, and it's everywhere in college football, but it's also great against middle of the field closed. I mean, middle field open. So how do you create a system like that? And I think the way that he inverted it is ingenious, but then also not necessarily placing people in these, you know, you are here. No, it's more of a fluid concept from the front all the way to the back and the back to the front. And so to me, I think he kind of met McVay. McVay hadn't kind of like the 6-1 stuff. Like, to me, is just all they did was just put an extra guy in there because it was such a run heavy offense and these quick motions. Okay, well, we're going to sit in our two high shell. You're going to move a guy. We're just going to spin down on top of it, but we've clogged all the gaps. We're going to put your running back in a phone booth, and we're going to funnel him right to the Mike linebacker that all he has to do is make a tackle. Mm-hmm. And so I think, to me, that and then watching that play out in the Super Bowl with Belichick, it was kind of like, okay, we've arrived. This is something we're on to something.
Yeah. And I think to place it in deeper context with the Rams specifically is those crossers. I mean, that's Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, bread and butter at that time. That's Sean McVay, bread and butter. That's Jared Goff, comfort zone right there at that time. And particularly when, you know, things were so fluid and could change post-snap the way that they did and now do with such frequency. Again, we're talking about this was only, what, 4 years ago?
Right, yeah.
We're talking about this like it's another era at this point. That's how much of a catalyst these two systems colliding with each other has created. Everything is different now. And so I think that when you talk about in the context of the Rams, the moments met each other at that perfect time and imperfect if you're Sean McVay, obviously it drove him nuts, but like met each other at the perfect time to show. So on the other side of it, you know, you're looking at safeties who are extremely empowered players. You're looking at a huge amount of trust that the coach is putting into not just the technical sides of what the defensive players are doing, but in how they are asserting and moving. And it's literally, it's not, you know, guys moving into, like you said, not moving into landmarks, essentially. It's guys who are literally asserting against the quarterback because of what they're doing pre-snap in the shell and then post-snap in the rotations. And I think that also has changed everything. When you look at it, the Rams now, you look at specifically the way that they've started to draft safeties. You look at specifically the way that they've brought in players opposite Jalen Ramsey and increased Jalen Ramsey's autonomy and empowerment and what he does in the defensive backfield. Those moments, that one game, and then ultimately, you know, McVay understanding people were going to try to run this against him. Not only did it force the quarterback change ultimately, right, yeah, but it also forced so many different ripple effects through the entire ecosystem of what this Rams team became. Those moments, those singular moments where we're like, God, this game's boring. 6 points against the Fangio Bear. Like, what do you do? 6 points. That's a boring game. That's a game you turn off. And it changed everything ultimately. And I think too, I want to dig in a little bit deeper to what, when you're looking, and again, we're talking about the earlier iteration of this.
Right.
Cody, when you're looking at it from the perspective of a quarterback, what is it that you're seeing?
Well, I think you go back to the whole deal with Jared Goff, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be a high processor in terms of, you've got to have spatial awareness at the maximum level. And you, what the system does, especially from a system that is under the center, play action heavy, now, once that quarterback turns his back, he's completely blind. His pre-snap thought process and his mental model, he has an idea of, he can look at contours and who's low and, okay, I know this formation, they've done this, but you don't know whether they're going to just pop back out into a too high shell, or if they're playing their version of cover six, or if they're going to smash somebody down into the box post-snap to cut a crosser. So mm-hmm. as I turn my head, I'm giving a ball fake, right? And then now all of a sudden I get my head back around. One, I have an edge player who's leveraged, so I can't just go and escape right away. But two, I also got to turn around and I have to reset my mental model, understanding where my guys are moving, where the defense now has moved their people, where are the leverage points, and where's going to be that empty space. And so to me, that part of the system, as a coverage guy myself, as a DB guy myself, that is what I think is the coolest part of this system, is how they have created a way to leverage the offense, but also force quarterbacks who may not have high processing skills to now think, because we know in the NFL, hesitation is death. And really in anything, if you hesitate, you're going to die. You're going to get sacked. You're going to end up throwing into a bad coverage or a bad situation. And when you run a simplistic offense, which you go back to the Jared Goff thing, it had to be simple. It had to be, you know, look, we're going to try and get them to load the box, and then we're going to try and run crossing routes in front of them. And the thing about the crossing route is, think about the easiest throw for you, just as a normal person.
None of them.
Right. But at least if somebody's standing in front of me, I can hit that person more often than not. Whereas now, okay, I'm bringing these crossing routes, all I got to do is just play catch. I just got to turn around. I just got to play catch. I know that spot's going to be open because of the coverage that we've seen. All he's got to do is beat his guy. And so when you do that, but then you leverage another person like that, and now I've got, okay, now he's kind of double covered, or that I didn't expect that guy to be there. That to me, that holding of the ball and allowing now your D-line to get there, that's kind of where the beauty of the system meets with the run fits and the coverage piece at the same time.
Yeah, I have to say, Cody, I mean, as somebody who was kind of critical of the Rams and you know, what they did with Jared Goff and giving him his contract extension, I'd kind of said, you know, you knew what Jared Goff's faults were from the beginning, right? You knew his limitations, you knew his strengths, but I don't know whether they were able to see around the corner, and I don't think they were expected to have been able to see around the corner and see what teams were going to try to do to him and exploit him in those ways, credit to them, I guess, for recognizing that as quickly as they did and saying, hey, you know what, this is not sustainable for us. This is not something that we can really maybe even fix. So they certainly made the move that they needed to make there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Amazing stuff. I wish, Cody, as I sit here and listen, I wish we could almost have a whiteboard here that we could show people the stuff that we're talking about here. Just fantastic breakdowns. Again, Cody Alexander, matchquarters.com. If you want to go a little bit more in depth,
great, we'll give newsletter. All the plugs. Great news.
Yeah, we'll give all the plugs at the end of the episode, but matchquarters.com. You can get his books on Amazon, on Twitter at @the_coach_A to follow along. And, you know, Cody, if I could kind of get a little more narrow just about the Rams and maybe your thoughts, and not so much about the X's and O's, but this transition that the Rams went through, right? I mean, you go from the Wade Phillips that they had in 2017 through 2019. They bring in Brandon Staley, you know, a total reset of everything that they're doing. He obviously jumped ship after 1 year for his great opportunity. And they bring in Raheem Morris, who is somebody who obviously you talked about the track record there. I'm just curious, as somebody who has followed this and studied this as closely as you did, what did you think about that? I mean, what did you think about that transition from Staley to Morris from a defensive standpoint, knowing the personnel that the Rams had? Was it something that struck you immediately as this is really going to work, as this is really kind of strange? Were you intrigued by it? I mean, where was your head when you knew that was the transition that they were going to make, you know, just about a year ago?
Yeah. You know, I was like, okay, well, are they going to hit reset again? But I think it had more to say about McVay than it did even with Raheem Morris. I think if you go, when you look, like the two giants of this profession in Nick Saban and in Bill Belichick, and you go and you look at how they structure their programs, it doesn't matter who is there, they're gonna run their system. Mm-hmm. And I think essentially I was interested in the first couple games, okay, how is this gonna work? What are they gonna look like, especially during the preseason? How much are they really gonna show? Are they just gonna say, hey, this is what we were last year, we're gonna run this during the preseason, but then behind closed doors, we're doing different things? And really what you saw was essentially McVay went to Morris and said, hey, here's the deal. this works. This is what I want. This is the best thing. I feel like I'm the top offensive mind in the league. This is what gives me the most trouble. This is why I want you to run this. And this is our program. This is our system. But not in this autocratic sense of where, like, you can't have a say in it, or you can't have your own personality. Because I think if you go and you look at what they did this year compared to what they did last year, it is different. In a way that they use Greg Gaines is much different than what they had been doing. Some of these front structures, it's more of what I would call an under front, which is more of a five, a shade, and a three, versus the kind of these bare looks, with which are 404, 303, depending on how, whatever you want. But they ran a little bit, probably a little bit more quarters action than you normally would see. You go and you look at, like, the Fangio system, you go look at Staley, they do a lot more nickel. They didn't do it. I mean, the Rams weren't playing a ton of four down last year. And so you could see that. And I really think it happened towards the middle part of the year. Okay, now he kind of got used to the system. This is, now I understand what works. Okay, these are my ideas. Okay, those don't work, but I like these ideas, and how can I mesh that in? Which is, you're always going to have that transition anytime that you're entering into something and you got to kind of put your stamp on it. Like, you're given the playbook and say, okay, this is what we're doing. Can you please figure this out? So, to me, that schematic part, it says a lot more about McVay. And then obviously with Morris being able to adapt and kind of through his career, been able, you know, to go come in and say, hey, you know, drop the ego and say, okay, this is what my head coach wants. This is what we want to do. And then kind of create your own variation of it, which obviously was successful. And it led to a Super Bowl.
Yeah. And Raheem is so assistant coach oriented. Like, he spent, and when I was out there watching every day to see what is this thing going to look like, he spent so much time with the assistant coaches every single day on the practice field, more so than I'd ever seen a coach do. Because as a coach at that level, you are literally, quite literally, you're coordinating, right? You're like the umbrella and everyone else is under you. But instead, he was immersing and investing in every single position. And it wasn't just because he's, an extrovert personality who likes being around people. It's because he was absorbing and understanding information, but also figuring out ways to apply it. And I think, Cody, too, when we talked about this a little bit, is you saw once he hit that sort of, okay, I know what this is now, after, again, hugely impressive, never ran this system before. This is also something where, relatively speaking, there still wasn't a ton of tape out on specifically what this defense was supposed to look like and what it would look like as an evolved version. Like, how do you move it forward? Because Brandon, he's only there 1 year and he's taken all his notebooks with him. So it's kind of like some of these positions, the evolution of the star position with Jalen, you know, that was a Brandon Staley concept that the Rams took and carried forward, but applied it with their sort of unique level of empowerment that they do give with players. And also that relationship you could see between Raheem and Jalen, you could see that really grow through the establishment of that position and the empowerment that it demands. But then also you could start to see Raheem's personality shining through and sort of that I don't want to say confidence. He's never been short on confidence, but that situational confidence where this defense really dictated down the stretch, like the pressures that he dialed up and the designs that he did, especially in the playoffs and the Super Bowl itself. To me, that screamed Raheem Morris. Like, some of the things that he did walking up Ernest Jones or any of the linebackers, inside linebackers to the line of scrimmage, some of the rotations, Aaron Donald on the outside against Tampa Bay, like that, just some of that stuff. How did you see that, Cody, moving forward and him start to put pieces of his own personality into the layers of what the Rams were doing defensively?
Yeah, I think if you look at what they were compared to the Chargers and the Broncos this year, you know, they ran more middle of the field close zone, almost by about 10% more than the Chargers, almost 20% more than the Broncos, according to PFF. Not a big cover one team. I think what you really saw philosophically is that viral video that went out with Jalen Ramsey talking about Diggs from the Cowboys and how different they are. He's an out of phase player versus Diggs is an in phase player. And I think it's it's really interesting to me because 90% of their rushes or their blitzes came from a five man rush, which means that they were really playing a lot of five man fronts. So when you go and you look at that analytically, that kind of tells you that, but then they're playing zone behind it, letting these guys react within short bursts and space and playing top down. And that's essentially what Ramsey was saying is like, look, mm-hmm. I play top down. I read and react. I'm looking at defenders and how they're moving and then reacting in that way. I've always been a big believer that you see ball, get ball, and you're not going to give up the big play. And to me, it goes back to Art Briles always used to say, look, all you got to do is don't let them score and give us the ball back. Because if you do that just one time, we're going to win. And I feel like that's kind of the same mentality McVay has. It's like, look, we don't need to necessarily be a top five defense every year. If we do, that's great. We're probably going to win the Super Bowl. But all we've got to do is be able to be a top 10, be in the top mm-hmm. third of the league and bend and don't break. And essentially what they've done is obviously they have stars and obviously you have, you know, Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, but leveraging them and essentially Xing out one offensive player target with Jalen Ramsey, but then with your five-man front, forcing a guard or a tackle to play Aaron Donald one-on-one every single down. You're going to win that. Just this statistically, you're going to win more than you're going to lose. You just are, because he's the best defensive player in the league. And so to me, when you look at it, it's so simplistic, but it's so genius that, you know, all they're doing is they say, we can win this one-on-one matchup. We're going to eliminate that. We're going to win this one matchup. And then now we're going to apply pressure in a pass heavy league. To me, I just think that that's where Raheem Morris did a great job of. And two, I mentioned about moving Greg Gaines off of a zero, not aligning him all the time on the center, but creating a shade. When you run a shade, it forces that guard to honor him. It gives you leverage on certain things. When you do move him, now you're moving across the face of somebody who's probably going to latch on top. It just creates gaps. And so to me, that movement to that was a little bit different. I thought that was a really good way of using kind of a workmanlike Gaines to kind of create these openings for everybody to have a little bit easier, especially at the linebacker spot.
Spatial Darwinism. And what I really love about this defense, the listeners of this podcast know that this is like, I'm in my happy place right now. This is just, I freaking love this stuff. Okay. So this has affected and changed everything, including it changed the way they draft. When I've talked and written so much about complementary traits, they're not looking for complete guys because of the way they're able to leverage space and leverage their best players within the scheme. This is the perfect scheme for a team that has no f***ing first round picks ever, because you literally can create these very simple leverages and you can create these mathematical advantages. And in a way, if you're finding players who are perfect for that specific thing that you want to do, and then you also have an Aaron Donald and you have a Jalen Ramsey who you're leveraging everything toward or moving the math toward essentially, and they're smothering in other ways, then those guys can shine for you quickly, early in their careers, which again is part of the thing that keeps this entire ecosystem afloat. So McVay had done that for years already on the offensive side, because that's how the offense is also structured, with those leverages and mathematical advantages. And he always says things like, you know, changing the math or adding plus ones and things like that. Well, the defense also does this. And in a way, to me, what I most loved about this defense, particularly seeing what it did up close in person, to quarterbacks, and specifically in that those series of training camp practices, so seeing what it did to McVay and to Jared, and not in a mean-spirited way, but in a way where it was like, this is the first defense that I'd ever seen in person, you know, in my somewhat brief, you know, shorter career in this, but like, this is the first time I'd seen a defense not react, but create mathematical assertions. And that's like, to me, that's a game changer in terms of, and it's also to me why everybody wants a piece of this thing, is because it's, if you do it right and you evolve it in a way that's, again, empowering to the players, and you have the right players who are executing, and you're also just fully leaned into it. One time, Brandon Staley told me, like, this defense doesn't work if you just don't fully buy into it. If you and every single assistant coach and every single player, because of the assignments and the responsibilities and the magnitude of the mental work that you're doing, snap in and snap out, if you don't fully buy into it, it won't work. But if you do, you can see that it becomes an assertive thing. It doesn't just become reactionary. Some of the ways that it can actually almost become, and it only maybe makes sense in my brain, but it almost becomes like the ethos of an offense that's attacking you, right?
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's you want to, as a defense, you don't want to have to always be reactionary all the time, because you want to be offensive in the way that you play. And that's, I think, to me, when I look at this defense, that's why I like it so much. That's why I study it so much, is because I can see in my mind, okay, they're leveraging this, they're applying pressure here, which is one of the reasons why, you know, I like that. I thought what we did at Baylor with the limited players that we had in terms of just talent, we were able to leverage, you know, what we were doing and really suffocated a lot of offenses. We were able to get a top 20 defense and play, you know, about 200, 300 more snaps than anybody else in the country. And so to me, when I look at this and when I'm looking at things, I want to know guys who are doing less with more. More with less. And when I look at what the Rams do, it's primarily in what they're doing in the draft, is they're like you said, is if I don't have to hit a home run every time, because when you look at people who enter the draft, it's all about home runs, right? Like, oh, we got a home run here. This guy's going to change our you know, to me, what they're doing is they're saying, look, if we need a home run, we're just going to go get the guy that fits the mold. And we know we're going to get it. Because if you go and look at it, a lot of times, what guys do, they just throw money at a player. That player doesn't really fit the scheme. He comes in, and then you look at a free agency bust, right? And so that becomes an issue. What the Rams have done is says, no, this guy fits what we want. We've got him. He's going to come in here, and he's going to do one job. He's going to do it really well, and he's going to change the math for us. What we'll do is put complementary players around them. And when you do that, it whittles down what you need. So you can be really particular about when you draft. And that's why they've not necessarily had a bunch of misses, is because it's like, okay, well, we need this spot. We need this guy to do this particular thing. Go out and find that guy, instead of just saying, hey, I think he might be able to do this. Or, hey, we got this really nice athlete. Now, how do we have to change the defense to fit what he needs. And I think, to me, that's the difference, which now is being applied to it. And that's why I think a lot of people are taking note with the Rams. It's not necessarily a, you know, we don't want first round draft picks. It's more or less like, look, we're going to spend that capital on a known commodity, so that way we don't have to try and hit home runs every time. Because let's be honest, in baseball, you do it 30%, you're going to go to the Hall of Fame, which the NFL is not like that. You go 30%, you're getting fired, you know? So to me, it's a little bit different mentality, and I kind of like what they're doing.
In that context, Cody, I mean, what should we expect entering year two here, with Raheem Morris? A full year now. You talked about some of the adjustments that went on during last season. I'm sure they've learned from that. I'm sure there will be more adjustments as we go on. A little bit of roster turnover in terms of some of these positions. Von Miller on the outside, even a Sebastian Joseph Day up front, a little bit of change in the secondary. I know you're not in the room, but you're very good at this. What would somebody studying this, what would you expect, seeing the personnel changes, knowing that they're going to have a full year here? Are you expecting anything dramatic, or do you think this will just kind of be a carryover of what they were doing last year?
I don't think you're going to see a real dramatic turnaround. I don't think they're going to do an about face 180 and then start running a bunch of four down nickel because they got Bobby Wagner. I do think that there is, and we've talked about this, Jordan, there's a lack of an edge rush opposite Floyd. What are you going to do that? How are you going to manufacture that? I think what they do, though, is they went out and said, look, we've got a guy who we can do multiple things with. I do think you'll see Wagner at an edge. I know people are saying that that's crazy, that's not going to happen, but I do feel like, what's the difference of him blitzing? You're not going to just start blitzing him more often. I think you're going to get into these different looks. So to me, I just look for an expansion in creativity. kind of him settling in. I don't think you're going to see a wholesale change in anything that they do. The percentages probably are going to change for usage and personnel just because of the personnel changes. I think that they felt comfortable with Gaines in the middle as kind of this worker. And he's just kind of a guy. He's not going to get a ton. He's not going to be sexy. He's not going to get a ton of sacks, but man, he commands a double team. And when he can hold that center in the middle if we need him to, which allows everything else to just work better. Because what you want to do is you want to keep those offensive linemen off your linebackers, regardless of what front you're running. You want them to be able to run free. And I go back to kind of what Kirby Smart said a couple of years ago in the offseason about how in order to play good pass coverage, you've got to be able to defend the run. And having these guys that can just kind of like cancel a bunch of gaps that they have in this front is essentially what they are doing, is that they, by having five men on the line, you now can really kind of leverage what you're getting from these offenses, and you can play with it up front. And so to me, I don't think you're going to see just a massive overhaul of the playbook. I think it's going to be the exact same as it was this year, but the numbers probably will change. And how I'm interested to see how they use Bobby Wagner and the usage that they use him in. Maybe we see a more four down front this year. I would assume that would probably be an uptick, because I do think that they like Ernest Jones. So they're not going to necessarily want to say, hey, you had a good year, we want to develop you, and then, oh, by the way, we're only going to run 5-1 looks and Bobby Wagner's in. So I think it's counterintuitive for what they're doing, so I think maybe you see a little bit more of that. But other than that, I don't see a wholesale change. Like I said earlier, I think McVay has a program. I think he believes in the program, and then they're going to stick with the program.
Yeah. And I think too, I think you'll see, I agree with, obviously, I mean, I don't disagree with anything you've said, but I think too, you'll see they do like, Ernest, to the point where I think you might even see a little bit of a rotation in who they walk up to the line. I know that they, I think to them that continues that multiplicity that they're looking for. If you're also factoring, it's kind of like, and it's not the same level, obviously, but it's when they would move Aaron Donald all around the front, is the lineman, first of all, good luck getting used to that guy throughout an entire game, let alone when he's moving back and forth and using different tendencies against different guys. Well, I think they sort of see these two inside linebackers in Ernest and in Bobby now, both as guys who expand that multiplicity of who they can walk up there, whether it's Ernest, and that will be more of, I think, a blitzing role, or whether they might actually experiment with Bobby closer to the line of scrimmage and closer to that four down front, and certainly want to continue to stay multiple and fluid on the back end. And I think that's, you see this in their draft class. They're moving toward a complete overhaul, minus Jalen of the second, I meant probably minus Jalen and Jordan Fuller and Nick Scott of the secondary. So their draft class, just a crap load of defensive backs, all guys who really fit their system, like their program, and all guys who you can see, you can really see the formula that went in to going out and scouting them and finding them, really high football, high emotional IQ guys who are coverage versatile, guys who, you're not necessarily looking at the testing numbers or the straight line speed. You're more looking at how they get into position, how they match routes, how they see the field, the type of vision they play with, and particularly what it will look like when they're coming down from that shell or rotating from that shell. And to me, that's the biggest tell of all, is if they stop doing that, that's when you know something will change. They can put whoever the hell they want up front or in the second level. If you start seeing big changes in the secondary, that's when you start to panic and you're like, oh darn, no, I won't get to cover this really cool defense anymore. So I think that that's something that certainly I'm wanting to keep an eye on. And two, I liked what you said about the pass rusher. That's a hill I will die on. I do think that they, and I say this pretty much every time we're on this podcast, which is why Rich is laughing right now, I think they will aggressively explore what their options are going to be as these waves of free agency continues, as they continue to evaluate and assess the potential of trades. They're not shy about that, and they don't have a set timeline the way that maybe other places do, in the sense where, okay, well, the season started, we're not making any more big personnel moves. I think the bonus and the beauty of both of these systems is how agile they are. It's kind of like what you were getting to earlier, Cody, is they mirror each other in ways that are so interesting, even as they assert against each other and they counter each other perfectly. But they share this same variable or the same philosophy in that they are extremely agile. And so for you, I guess this is probably an impossible question to answer, but this defense in general, we're seeing it trickle across the league, just as we've seen McVay Shanahan system trickle and evolve across the league. We've seen now McVay evolve that system forward. Almost, you know, it's not funny, but it's cool slash funny in my mind as a direct reaction of this defense that he now has in house. And so I'm wondering to you, what is the future of this system? What does it look like as it continues to move forward? Not necessarily with the Rams, but as you're watching other teams across the league play with this thing now.
Yeah, I think too, going back to kind of the roster moves, I think you kind of have an idea of where they think the future is going is, okay, the NFL is such a personnel-based league. They, you know, everybody is studying who is on the field, who's together on the field, you know, and then how that expands. Well, that goes for offense, but it also goes for defense. If I'm constantly running a 5-1, you know, there are certain areas of the field, and you see this when you see teams play the Rams, that you may not be able to attack certain spots or certain players, but there are little spots that if you are patient enough and you can get the ball out, that you can dink and dunk a little bit down the field. Now, most people understand that's not what the NFL wants to do. They want flash. They want to throw the ball. Most offense coordinators, they want to take shots. But I think with what they're doing with Wagner and Jones of, okay, even if we bring in another edge, can we keep that nickel personnel out on the field, but then get to these other looks, just like offenses try and put personnel out there to get you into your personnel group, only to then run concepts that are from a completely different tree. And so to me, I think the evolution of where the offense is going is going to get mirrored on the defensive side of, okay, how can we be more multiple with this? Even though we're not necessarily going to wholesale change, how can we get more multiple with this? What are the players? What are the skills that we have? And who can we kind of move around? Because if I look up and I'm an offense coordinator and I see, okay, they got their four down package in. Here's our four down list. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to see. And then I look up and, oh, they just got into it. They're actually running their 5-1 stuff. Now, hold on. I got to switch over. And now I've got to get onto my other part. That little hesitation in that little cat and mouse game that creates doubt, but it also cuts down plays. Because mm-hmm. now when I get this personnel grouping, I have this is my wheelhouse, because these are the only things that can work that I feel comfortable against both of those looks. And when you do that, you reduce the playbook. And once you reduce the playbook, again, that's people don't talk about this enough on defense. If you can reduce the playbook, that's a very offensive way of looking at things. Mm-hmm. So if I know I can reduce your playbook by personnel usage, okay, now I've eliminated things that I don't have to go chase goals. And when you do that, you allow your players to play a lot faster, because, hey, we're doing this because that will eliminate this from their playbook. And that's what they want to do. And it goes back to, you know, everybody talks about Bill Belichick and making everybody left-handed and doing that. But that's what you're doing in that sense, is if the more multiple I can get, the more different looks that I can get. That's a big thing going on in college right now, is how can we get these even fronts, because I know I get a pass rush, but how can I get into odd run fits, odd spacing? It's just called spacing. But how can we get into these where now the offense looks like, oh, this is simple? Because every OC loves to draw a four-man front because the angles are great. It's beautiful. The aesthetics are beautiful. An odd front is ugly because everybody's down blocking, and then, well, I got to pull a guy, but he's got covered. So what am I going to do? So if you can give a four-man presentation but get into odd spacing, I think that's what we're seeing at the college level. And I just would assume that we're probably going to get different things in iterations of it in the NFL, of just how we're going to but in more of a personnel lens of how can we use this personnel to give these looks and bounce from one thing to another and really keep these offensive coordinators kind of guessing at what we're doing. Cause we already see it in the coverage part. Why can't we do this on the front part?
Yeah. And I think what you were saying about limiting the playbook and, you know, limiting the sheet too. I mean, I could talk about this for hours. We will get you out of here in a second, but you saw the direct reaction on the offensive side. Sean McVay stopped doing play action and went into empty a hell of a lot more than he'd ever done in his entire career because it limits how multiple the defense can be. They have to declare. And so he's literally telling you, I understand that you're trying to take my play sheet. Here is how I'm going to reach back and try to take yours as well, even if I can't have my old one back. And I think that that's this whole, I mean, the cat and mouse game of it is so fascinating. It's something that I love talking about. Cody, you're fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us today. You guys, you have to follow him on Twitter. I saw you're up early this morning doing Rams threads this morning. So you guys have to go follow him on Twitter at the Coach A. There's a couple of underscores in there, but you'll find him. We'll link to him. Make sure you guys are checking out his work at Match Quarters. Make sure you guys are subscribing to his newsletter. I learned something new. He's got a bunch of Rams stuff that's either out or coming out in the next couple of weeks. And it's fascinating stuff. I learn so much every time we talk. You're so gracious with your time. And again, you're one of the best teachers I've ever met in this business. I told you I was going to make you uncomfortable by fangirling out over you.
I just
really, really appreciate you coming on with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Anytime I can nerd out on defensive football, I'm down. So.
And Cody, you know, not just five books, by the way. But five books in the last 5 years. You are a machine, man. And these are all on Amazon. I'm just curious, is there anywhere anybody would start? I mean, if they want to start diving into this, any of those five that you would recommend diving into first?
If you're not into the nuts and bolts and you just want to kind of have an idea of kind of where we're headed, Hybrids is a great place to start. It's kind of an introductory, it's more of a history type book, but it does go into schematics. So, but it's not over the head where you can't understand. If you're more into the coverage aspect, want to learn more about quarters, I would recommend starting with Match Quarters, the white book. And then if you just kind of want an overview of how a modern defense is fitting nowadays, I would start with Anchor Points, which is my red book. And I make them all monochrome color, so they're very easy to identify.
And they look nice on the shelf. I have Anchor Points. I'm staring at it right now. It's underneath my copy of Dune, actually. So that's high that's high ranking right there. But yeah, they look nice on the shelf too. And one thing I will say, and I promise I will not embarrass you any more than I've already done, but seriously, there is a specific way a lot of times that defensive minds or coaching minds in general sometimes talk about the game that is very exclusive and it's intimidating. But what Cody does and the way that he teaches and explains things, even if you see things in your mind, which when I came to him talking about the Staley defense and what I was seeing at practice and wanted to talk about like solar systems orbiting around each other, to him, he translates that immediately and understands that without saying, no, you're wrong for thinking about it that way. Instead, he says, oh, that makes sense that you're seeing it like this. Here's, you know, here's a more technical way that you then sort of disseminate that information. And I think that that's one of the coolest things that a teacher could do, particularly when we are all just learning as we go about the sport, and particularly with, you know, myself not having a background in playing or coaching, it's invaluable. It's been an invaluable resource. And so can't thank you enough for being so gracious with your time here, but also in many, many conversations past, and really looking forward to what you explore and how you think about the Rams and how you, I've gotten a sneak peek at some of the things you're writing about the Rams, but I'm really, really excited for a couple of those pieces you have coming out, and really appreciate your time, Cody.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it. And I'll have that stuff out. It'll be the first week of June. I went to a deep dive when we started having a conversation about this, and I got interested too. How are they different? And so those will be out in June on my Substack.
Yes. So you guys can subscribe to the newsletter. You'll get them directly into your inbox. And meanwhile, speaking of subscribe, man, is The Athletic great to subscribe to or what, Rich?
I just got to say here before we wrap, like, it's been a pleasure for me to listen to this because, I mean, you have two people here in Jordan and Cody who are just so passionate about this stuff and who have invested in it. And my goodness, the two of you could put on a seminar. Like, I would pay to sit for an hour and just listen to this. So, again, thank you so much, Cody. And Jordan ran through it, but please check out all of Cody's stuff. Matchquarters.com is a good catch all for everything that Cody offers. His books are on Amazon. You can find them on the website. Twitter at @the_coach_A. All kinds of great stuff on there. Cody, thanks so much. We'd love to have you back to talk about how this evolves. And Jordan, man, your passion. I'm wiggling around on my couch.
I'm waving my arms around. I haven't even had a full cup of coffee yet. That's how excited I've been about this. I was like, if I have a full cup, it'll be too much. I'll be insane.
It's just awesome though. And this is I'm not being overzealous here, but I mean, this is the enthusiasm that you bring to your job that it comes through in all of your work. And I know it's appreciated by all of our subscribers. And as you said, Jordan, if you're not yet a subscriber, boy, is this a good opportunity. I mean, we are entering the off season here, the heart of the off season OTAs. You eventually are going to be able to get out there and see this defense and see how things change or how some of the new personnel fits in, what Bobby Wagner is doing out there. So you're going to want to jump in and catch up with Jordan all off season and entering training camp. And boy, do I have some great news for you, because if you haven't already joined The Athletic, you can do so today. Right now, in 45 seconds after we wrap up this podcast, by going to theathletic.com/11personnel. And you're not going to believe this, you're going to get Jordan's favorite thing in the entire world, which is what?
The Fangio Staley defense.
Other than that. Yeah,
my favorite thing in the world, you will get a great discount, you guys, every single time you subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast. You get my all-time favorite thing in the world, which is a great discount. Thanks to Cody. Thanks to you, Rich. This was one of the most fun episodes I think we've done. No offense to future guests who have been on and are, I know, going to be on with us again in the future, but this is a high bar to have been set. And as always, guys, thanks for listening. We hear you. We love when you guys share our inside jokes with us. We definitely love getting questions. So hit us up anytime and we will catch you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.